You heard. You coming.
Sanders from the pocket delivers to the end zone, and it's a leaping touchdown caught by Travis Hunter.
To the line here, fakes it, throws into the end zone. Weaver, touchdown!
Some extra power from McCaskill pushes him across the plane to the goal line. Touchdown.
Colorado blocks the punt. It's a scoop and a score for CU. Trevor Woods.
Welcome back to the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast. And what a beatdown we just received at the hands of douchebag Dan and the Oregon Ducks.
That was a feeling that's not foreign to me, I'll say, being a Buffs fan for years. I just didn't expect, I didn't think I was going to feel that again, at least not for a while.
Not for a long while.
So it surprised me a bit. It took me by surprise. In hindsight, I guess it all kind of makes sense, but we can get into the game. But yeah, it was ugly. It was ugly. It was 42-6, and it was not that close.
No.
So
it wasn't. I'm curious whether you think that they only scored 7 in the second half because we actually figured out how to play defense, or if you think that they just took the pedal off.
I don't think they took the pedal off. I don't think they took their foot off the pedal because Dan Lanning was out for blood. They literally they turned it over on downs because they were going for it on fourth down because they were trying to score more touchdowns. They were going for it on fourth and goal at the 5 in the second half. They were trying to eviscerate them, not just win. Like, he was trying to send a message that you can't just all of a sudden be the most talked about team in college football when you haven't earned it the Lanning way.
There's still articles about CU all over.
Which is, for the record, taking over a football team that went 10-4 the year before and has been a recruiting staple in the Pac-12 right? For years. So whatever. But yeah, you know, earned it. Yeah.
Yeah, he walked into a pretty cush situation.
God.
I'm not saying I could coach them as well as he did, but I'm pretty sure that I could have coached that team to the same start that they have right now.
I feel like just generally from the game, one of the things that I took from it, obviously the whole Dan Lanning, Oregon, you know, pregame speech thing was this huge thing in the media.
Yeah.
And look, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with him going for it on fourth downs in the second half when they're already up 42-0. I don't have a problem with any of that. You want to put 80 points on us? Go ahead, put 80 points on us. If we can't stop you, do it. Whatever. I don't care. Yep. I don't care that he said the quote, Cinderella run is over. I don't care that he said they're in it for clicks, not wins, which, you know, it was a 3-0 team versus a 3-0 team. So, I mean, sure.
What else could we have done? Yeah,
sure. I don't have a problem with any of that. Look, he did what he had to do to fire his team up, and he did it. He put it out there into the world via a giant ESPN ABC camera. Like, he knew the camera was in there. He was doing that for a reason.
He was doing it for clicks, which is the funny
thing. He's doing it for recruiting. He's trying to give the impression that, like, you can't do it the way that Coach Prime is doing it, and it's not the right way. That's what he's trying to say. Mm-hmm. You have to do it our way. I know what I'm doing, and we're going to show you by beating the hell out of this team. So I get all of that legitimately. I two things about it. Number one, in the post game, he then tried to walk it back a little bit. He was like, oh, you know, it's a pregame speech. Like, I maybe got a little too into it there, but we're just trying to fire the guys up. Look, man, if that's what you think, go out there and say it. Okay. Yeah. After the game, go out there and be like, yeah, that's how I feel. I feel like they've got all these cameras and they're doing all this stuff in the media and everyone is covering them so much. Meanwhile, we're over here. We're the real, you know, team that should be getting talked about. Go ahead, go out there and say it. He did not. He totally backed up on it and totally was like, I really respect them and everything they've done. They've really turned that team around, blah, 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 blah. So I thought that was kind of funny. And then the second thing is, giving that speech, saying things like it's substance, not style. It's not about flash, all that stuff. As your team, which is Oregon, which is notorious for having thousands of uniform combinations, being the Nike school, being like the flashy school, literally, you like that's what they're known for, who was literally about to go play a game in cleats that change color.
There's some mood changing cleats.
Just the background of that is funny to me. Again, totally, like, I get why he said everything he did. I know it's not the same. I just think it's funny. If we were going to play, like, I don't know, Utah and Kyle Whittingham is giving that same speech, I'd be like, yeah, totally makes sense coming from Kyle Whittingham. You know, that's their team. That's what they do. But from Oregon, I thought it was kind of laughable. So, yeah, I don't know. Those are all my Dan Lanning thoughts. I don't like the guy, obviously, but he had his guys ready to go, man. I mean, you can't argue with that. That team was ready to go.
They were. And I'm with you where I don't blame him for all the stuff he said pregame. Like, if he wants to say it, it's fine. I didn't even watch his postgame stuff, so I didn't even know he kind of walked back a little bit on what he said. And
I didn't watch it either. I just saw the clips and okay, the like reported quotes and stuff. But yeah,
so I didn't even see that. But what I did see that he said, we came here for a battle and we didn't get one.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that one.
I what kind of coach takes digs at a team after they play? That makes no sense to me. And that's where he kind of seems like a little bit of a man child. A little bit petulant there.
Hey, some guys inherit 10-4 teams that, like I said, are established Pac-12 title contenders year after year after year. And they're in their third year with said team. And some guys inherit 1-11 teams that looked like they were about to disappear. And are in their first year. Like, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
But that's fine. You didn't get a battle. That's fine. We'll see how you feel about CU in 2 years.
That's the thing.
We'll go from there.
I'm so bummed we don't get to play him again, because even next year, I think that this game is 100% a different outcome. Not necessarily CU wins, but it's a good game, and it's coming down to the end.
I would like to think so. I do think that's going to be the hardest part about leaving the Pac-12 is, and who knows what all the Pac-12 teams are going to look like next year. I mean, literally, like, Bo Nix has to leave. Michael Penix has to leave. Caleb Williams is going to leave. Like, Cam Rising, I don't know what his eligibility is.
He's got to be done after this year. I mean, but this is his third year as their quarterback, and was he a grad transfer?
I don't know. I think he was a grad transfer. I think you're right. I think he was, but I'm not 100% on that. All I know is all those guys from those top teams, all those teams are replacing their quarterbacks next year.
Yeah.
So they'll probably still be good because they have recruited well and they have a lot of talent. I think Washington's head coach is legit. Obviously, Lincoln Riley has his success. But believe me, I will be following Oregon closely in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Following closely. I would say that's the big thing that's going to hurt us, not being in the Pac-12, being in the Big 12. I feel like we'll be fighting that perception game all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, just because of the talent that's in the conference. I mean, Utah will be there. I think Utah obviously will always be good. I think
if Whittingham doesn't retire.
Right. And we'll have the opportunity to like really do well in that conference. And obviously the playoff is expanding and all that stuff, but we're getting ahead of ourselves with that. But I'm with you. I wish that we had the opportunity to play them in a year or two when the team and the whole foundation is more established. But who knows? Maybe we'll run into them in a game that matters a lot more than the fourth game of September one of these days.
No, yeah, I mean you're right. It's definitely in the future, but that with the whole perception thing, I mean if Prime gets the recruits he thinks he needs in the off season between now and then the start of next season, I mean there is an auto bid from the Big 12.
Yeah,
all that perception stuff gets thrown out because you get to prove whether or not you belong
anyway. Yeah.
And maybe like you said, we'll be able to play Oregon in a game that matters. But I don't call me crazy. I don't foresee Oregon getting one of those auto bid spots over Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, USC, Washington. Like there's that they've got a. I mean, I get.
That's a lot of teams.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not saying that they're going to win. I'm saying that this is the year that if they're going to do really well, I think they've got to do it now.
Agreed.
Personally.
Because otherwise they're recruiting against a bunch of teams that recruit just as well as they do.
Yes. And they're going to be forced into a spot where they just, they don't have the advantages that they normally have. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes for them. But
One other thing on just the Oregon thing in general before we actually kind of dive into the game a bit. But did you see Phil Knight meeting Prime before the game?
Mm-hmm.
I bet that really just pissed Dan Lanning off to see the founder of Nike, who is obviously an Oregon alum, and the reason they have all the money they have, all the combos they have, all of that, just absolutely kissing ass to Prime, because he knows how valuable the Prime name is, and two, he is, I'm sure, so excited that he's got Prime back in good graces with Nike so that they can do like brand deals and stuff.
Bro, when the Prime cleats like become normal back on the market again,
yeah,
they're gonna be everywhere.
That's what are they selling for right now?
I have no idea.
I'm looking it up because I don't play obviously football, but I want them. I want them very much.
Yeah, I have no clue, but yeah, Dan Lanning I'm sure that was hard for him, just like it was hard for him to look all year long while he had his team and they weren't getting enough coverage and
yeah.
Coach Prime was taking up all the space on the internet. But sorry about it.
Yeah, Dan Lanning's a bitch. I mean, there's just no way around it. He's a bitch. But to dive into the game that was, again, reminiscent of years past in not a good way. Once I saw one person point out that, and this kind of leads me to think that you mentioned that before we started even recording that this is probably the best game Oregon's going to play all year, and this is probably hopefully the worst game we're going to play all year.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that is a good point, because last year's team, again, one of the worst teams in the history of Power 5 football. No, the history of FBS football.
Yes.
Only lost 49-10. So
yeah,
you're telling me.
Yeah.
That we're only a 3-point improved team over last year? I don't think so.
Yeah, I said that just because they really, like, credit to them. I do think it was a perfect storm of bad for CU. Like, it's a bad matchup on the lines. They were in Autzen. That team was angry. Their coach was fired up. They were focused, clearly focused. And angry that's boys. Something that I think CU is going to deal with a lot, especially if the media coverage continues, is they're going to get everybody's best shot, because every coach is going to fire their team up with, like, this is a nationally you know, televised game or whatever, except for our one with ASU now is officially on the Pac-12 network. It'll be our first Pac-12 network game, which is hilarious.
I think we're contractually required to get like one or two on each year. So
yeah. So that'll be funny. But yeah, I just think we're going to be dealing with that a lot. You know, three emotionally exhausting games beforehand, injuries to key players, all of that stuff came in to just create one giant like wrecking ball of a game where we just got absolutely blasted from the jump. So a lot of things went wrong. A lot of things were not done well, but it just was, even from a outside non X's and O's standpoint, it was pretty much the worst case scenario. So
yeah, I don't know how that game could have gone any better or any worse. I mean, because it was just, I mean, just from the start, I mean, they get the ball, drive down, and score with ease. I mean, they had pretty much no trouble on that first drive.
Yeah.
We get the ball, three in, it was a three and out, right?
Oh, yeah, it was, yes, three and out. We literally, you texted me and literally said, what the fuck was that?
That's right. And that's not to mention that one, that three and out included a third and nine wide receiver screen
that went backwards for 4 yards. It's the only ball Jimmy caught all day, basically.
Because he had the dropsies again, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all love Jimmy because, I mean, just last year, he had his moment of the season where, like, no matter what, we'll always look back on that as, like, as a positive. But
he's going to continue to make plays for this team, 100%. I am not out on Jimmy Hornet by any means. I just do think you can't deny that he has dropped quite a few balls. Yeah.
Yep. It's been noticeable. I keep going back and forth on this because I think we all know Sean Lewis is a really good offensive mind. But, and to his credit, he has no running game to lean on. So he's basically just like, he's basically, I compare it to a chess match where the opponent knows the general idea of what your next move is going to be every time you are about to do something. And so he's trying to fight that and still get yards. And he ran into a team that just, as far like the lines, they outclassed us. They were able to match up with us on the outside to the point where, you know, even if we did have time for Shadur, which we didn't really, he was having a hard time getting guys wide open. It was ugly. And I don't know how we improve upon that, but I also know that we're probably not going to run into another team as physical on the lines as Oregon until we reach Utah later this year.
Yeah, probably Utah. Washington State's D line actually is very good. But yeah, I'm not sure if I feel like USC's lines haven't been all that impressive, but we'll see. We'll see this week. I think, okay, I'm just going to say you can, if there is no one already on this point, you can add me to skeptical of Sean Lewis. I think he's very smart. I think he is a good offensive coordinator. I just am worried because game one against TCU, I think we both talked about it. I don't know that it could have been a better called game, just period. Like everything was working. It all felt like everything was going at exactly the right time that it was supposed to. They did exactly what they wanted. Nebraska, for the first half, they struggled, and then right before halftime, they kind of figured it out, and then from the rest of the game on, it was pretty much okay. CSU was a struggle for 3.5 quarters on offense. I mean, and now we're just at this point where, yes, Oregon is a more talented team than us. We were missing our best player, arguably our best player, on both sides of the ball.
Definitely our best player, I would say.
And, like, yes, there were other elements at play. But at the same time, man, we ran the ball three times in the first half. Three.
That's
and
it.
I know we were down 35 to nothing by the end, but it was 14. It was 13 points, and then it was like 21 points in the second quarter. That's not, you don't need to start throwing it every play at that point. We're not chasing points at that point. There's so much game left. Like, you need to just have a good drive. And they never ran it on back-to-back plays again. That's, they did that again. I don't know why. I mean, I know why, but it's just, I get frustrated because, like, even the DNVR guys, right? The DNVR buffs guys are like one of the major podcasts and media outlets that talk about this stuff. I was listening to them earlier, listening to their like recap of the game, and they were talking about how, like, man, we don't have a run game. We don't have a run game. And I'm like, how do we even know? I mean,
yeah.
How do you know if you run the ball three times in one half? Dylan gets one carry, and then he gets a outside short pass, and then at where everyone is waiting because they have four people in the box, basically. They're just not even trying to stop the run. And I understand that if you get 1 yard, it makes it very difficult after that. But I would love it if they went out against USC and they straight up ran the ball three times in a row. Give me like your three, what you feel your three best run plays are.
Yeah.
Just do it. I don't even care. I don't care if they go three and out. Just fucking do it. Because if they never see you run it twice in a row, then A, they already don't expect you to run it ever. So they just pass rush on every single play. So Shador has just no chance because they feel like they know it's coming. And B, if you never run it two times in a row, then as soon as you run it once, they're even more like, nope, definitely not going to run it now. So I just feel like it's painfully predictable right now. And I hope they get it fixed. I know one of the things I talked about last week was how Alton is going to be back. And then he didn't get a touch until that one touchdown drive in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
He finally got in. He had five carries. So, and they did run it with him on third and two, and he got 4 yards or whatever, 5 yards, which is like, that's like the big difference, I feel like, having him there, is he's big enough to blow through some people and get those yards. I don't know, man. I want to say everything will be fine and the offense is going to be fine. But goddamn, it just felt like I was watching Darren Shiverini again there for long stretches of time. Okay.
It did. I mean,
we watched a team go 5-0 and then go 0-7. Okay.
We've seen
for the first couple of games, they looked awesome. And by the end of the year, everyone knew every play that was coming. And I am terrified that that's the direction that we're working towards. I think Oregon obviously has more talent. This is three games in a row now where we've gone long stretches and been able to do absolutely nothing on offense. And I just hope that they try to change it up. That's all.
Yeah. No, you bring up a good point with the whole, like, it's a really good point with running it, not running it more than one time or two times. You know what I mean? Not running it more than once in a row.
Run it three times. Go three and out for all I care. You're going to do it anyway if you try to do the same shit over and over again. So, I don't know. I'm just do something different at this point. I don't know what to tell you.
Every good coach has, not every, most good coaches at this point have figured out that even though they know nothing about the sport, the analytical, like, math guys and statistical people can really help you win football games. And I guarantee most of the teams that we're going to play throughout the rest of the year have a guy like that on staff that's breaking down film. And if we keep that up, they're going to say, when they run the ball, you can sell out on the pass the next play every single time. And that just makes Shadur's job harder, the line's job harder, the receiver's job harder, and it makes Sean Lewis's job harder. And also, if you take out Shadur's sacks, this is not like a great number at the college level, but we're averaging 5.13 yards per carry if you take out Shadur's sacks. And then if you take out McCaskill's average, if he only had an average of 3.4. It's even higher. It's somewhere between 6.2 and 7, because I'm not going to do the math right now, but the other three guys had between 6.2 and 7 yards per carry on average. So, I mean, we were getting decent yardage on the ground, and yet we still just shied away from that run. And then with McCaskill, this blows my mind. So maybe you see what was happening here and you have a reasonable idea on why they did this. This makes no sense to me. McCaskill is like, they say he's ready and he's ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they don't give him a touch until the fourth quarter. So at that point, you're risking him getting hurt for nothing, because at that point, we are absolutely not going to come back. And it's so late in the game. He's getting run against the twos. So he's not getting like the best of the best kind of game action he can get. What's the point of playing him at that point? At that point, just save him another game, because he's not going to, there's no upside, I guess, aside from getting his feet wet. But if they wanted to do that, why not do it early in the game?
Yeah. So two things. Number one, as far as the rushing average, I'm going to say a majority of that, they didn't run the ball well. I will put that out there. But a majority of that is on garbage, who was it? I think it was Hankerson had a run on third and 33 where he got 12 yards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, third and 33. And other than that, the other two runs went for 1 yard. So that was, again, that's everything for the whole first half. That's all your run plays. One run for 1 yard, one run for 1 yard, and one run for 12 yards on third and 33. Whatever. And then the other thing was, as far as McCaskill goes, I think it's something that this staff and Coach Prime in particular, it's something they're going to do that I think is going to be annoying as a fan. But I get it from a person who actually cares about these guys' perspective. He's done this now with, he did it with McCaskill. He's done it with other players who seem like they're getting close to working back. I feel like he is just going to wait until he sees it in practice, like all week, which, I get it. I get that he wants to make sure that they're doing okay, that they're healthy, that they understand the game plan. His whole thing with Alton was that he wants to make sure that Alton looks like Alton. That was his whole thing that he kept saying, and he wasn't going to let him go until he's ready. So now I think he's saying he's 100% ready physically, but I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't see it for a full week in practice, so he's not going to have him play the whole game. It did bother me, or I shouldn't say bother me, but I was a little surprised about it. I really wanted to see Alton out there, in particular just because he can actually block pass rushers, which is extremely helpful when you have an offensive line who can't stop giving up pressures and sacks, and a quarterback who seems genuinely afraid of what's coming at him. I just think for this week, Alton hasn't been practicing full go for very long, and Coach Prime seems to have a policy of like, he's just not going to play these guys, not because they're not physically ready, but just because he has to watch them practice a full week of practice, and he needs to know that they've put in the work for the week to be able to play in the game. So he's not going to be one of those coaches that's just like, well, he's my best player, and even though he hasn't been playing, I'm going to put him out there. He's not really going to be like that. So like with Alton, I think that's the thing. I think when he says he's ready, he means physically he is okay. He is ready to play, but clearly, yeah, he didn't see enough for the week to have him be the starter yet. But I don't know. I thought he looked fine when he was in there. He got five carries. The biggest thing is, yeah, I think he can block a little better than like
Dylan. I did notice him pick up a good block. I could pick up a block on the pass play, and I was like, oh, that was
He is clearly solid. Strong. He was the lead blocker on a run play that was where Shador just went around the side and Alton came over and totally blocked a guy to spring Shador for like 9 or 10 yards or whatever it was. I do think that's going to be like a pretty big asset. The main thing is, I just think while he may not be super explosive like Dylan, I think, or explosive in the same way, I should say, he's not a 4-3 guy or whatever Dylan right. is. But they can hand it to him and he's going to get, 4 yards or whatever it was that he was getting, even though he get hit at the line of scrimmage. Like, I love Dylan, but every game he gets legitimately picked up off of his feet and buried into the ground on some of these tackles at the line of scrimmage. Like, he's not falling forward because the guys hitting him outweigh him by 100 pounds.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, to get back on track. Yeah. I just think the whole thing with Alton is he has to see it in practice for a week. It's the same thing like Brandon Gant hardly played. Travis J was in there at some points, but not and all the time.
Burned.
And he got cooked. Those guys are still working their way back. And he probably wouldn't have played if they weren't struggling at corner already, Yeah. So I think it's one of those things where he just has this policy, like, unless I see it consistently in practice leading up to the game, you're not in the game. Which is fine, I guess. Like, clearly he knows better than I do, but I was disappointed when Dylan was the starting back. I was like, damn it.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, something's up.
I was damn it. There we go. Yeah. And then I think the carries at the end were just, well, we're in a blowout and let's get him some carries and let him get hit a little bit and get some game action, So. Yeah.
And I think that's fair. Following that train of thought, I still think you could get him more than 5 carries.
Yeah, I mean, it was all on one drive.
Yeah.
I would have thought, I know. For me personally, I'm like, put him in the whole second half, whatever. But clearly he wasn't planning on playing him very much. So, I hope next week, or this weekend, I hope they line up that first play and he's in the backfield. I really do. Or he and Dylan. I don't care. Whatever. Like, get crazy with it. But like, I hope he's back there because that will at least that'll tell me two things. Number one, okay, like, he is going to be in the game and he's going to be a factor. And number two, it tells me it's not he's not as good as we thought he was thing. That's the other thing that I'm worried about is that it's like a, or whatever's going on with like Kaviasi Smoke and those guys. Like, it's not one of those situations. So
I think that's some battered buff syndrome that we've got. I find myself every time there's a legit player, and now we've got a lot of them, but every time there's a legit player, I'm like, oh, what if last year was a fluke? Or what if that?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, yeah.
I get that. But I mean, you mentioned Travis J. I feel bad for Travis J because I saw so many people on like All Buffs commenting about how he like did not belong and he was getting cooked, and he did get cooked for sure. But I also think he's rusty and
clearly.
When you come in and your first game action since you got hurt is against probably the fastest team in the conference.
Yeah. And like an NFL caliber wide receiver who will go in day one or two, probably day two.
Yeah, Troy Franklin is a beast. I feel like that's not a great barometer for a guy's first game action. I'm not saying that Travis J is going to be like all Pac-12 or anything, because I think obviously Travis Hunter is the one, and then Omarion Cooper, who also didn't look like.
I thought he played fine. Honestly,
he did, but it wasn't like he was locking down the side of the field like he has been.
No, but. Honestly, like, I don't think I think there were so many problems that it's hard to play your. I mean, like, in any sport, it's hard to play just your responsibility when you feel like there are things happening around you that are kind of out of your control that are bad, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm not saying I haven't broken down every snap of his play, but I felt like he was playing fine. I mean, they had some miscommunication stuff where, you know, Trevor Woods went to go help him over the top, and then they had no one on Franklin in the middle, and that was a touchdown. And I don't know. I just, there was so much going on there. I can't even like critique the individual corners too much. Mm-hmm. The only reason why we talk about Travis Jay is because he was one-on-one with Troy Franklin, got burned for a touchdown on one of those plays. So it was like clear and obvious, you know, but
he was close to making the play though. It's not like he was like,
no, like, I mean, if it is not a potential Heisman contender throwing the ball and an NFL wide receiver, like that might not be completed as nearly as easily as they made it look anyway. So,
yeah, I think if Travis Jay's like 4 yards behind him and Troy Franklin's just catching the ball with nobody around him, then I think it's like, okay, yeah, this guy's not belong on this field. But for everyone to like jump on him after like 3-4 plays, I was like, all right, let's cool it. Let's see how he plays next week. Again, not like that's going to be an easier matchup because this is the best wide receiver group in the conference, arguably in the country.
Arguably the country, yeah.
So it's not, and we're most likely not going to have Travis Hunter back, which, I mean, it's, we all know how good Travis Hunter is. I didn't think it would be as glaring without him as it was for this last game, because you could tell, like, yeah, Zay Weaver was getting open. He was doing all right, but I think Travis Hunter makes it really hard to game plan and fully stop this offense, because you have to worry about him making a ridiculous catch or doing something that like just like normal athletes can't do. And then defensively, you know, he will lock down whatever side of the field he's on. So yeah, it was very glaring to see him to see this team without him.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, if you want to talk about a couple of positives, I thought Zay Weaver played pretty well. He was 9 for 75, which doesn't sound that crazy, but when you consider like the total amount of offense we had in the game, that's a big portion of it.
Yeah.
He is good. Zay Weaver is legit. Okay. Javon Antonio actually looked pretty good.
He looked slow, though. I will say he didn't look very
good. No, quick. He's definitely just a big dude. He's a big target. But that's his role is not to be a speedster by any means. But
he's not going to burn anybody.
No, but he will catch a ball and drag five guys for another 6 yards. So, you know, I'm okay with it. But that I do think Travis Hunter adds another dimension for the third guy that just opens other things up. Like Jimmy had nothing all game long, basically. Zay Weaver would get open, but he would be open for a second and then he'd catch the ball and they'd all be around him. And yeah, Javon Antonio made a couple of plays. Mikey Harrison caught a touchdown again, which is just like a funny story.
I love it.
Yeah, no, there's a lot that they are going to have to shore up, and I hope they figure it out, but it was rough. I mean, even Shador, like, it's by no means his fault. He had guys in his face all game long, but you can see it happening. Like, he's not stepping up into the pocket anymore, because he just drops back and he either stays exactly where he is or he takes a step or two backwards, which only makes it easier for guys to get around Tank and Savion Washington, because they just come around behind him and he stepped into them, basically.
Yep.
Or like he continues to have a really hard time letting plays die, which sounds crazy because I know he can move around and make things happen, but in this game he was not, for a lot of those plays, he was not going to make something happen. I mean,
he had nowhere to go.
He had a couple early on, especially where like he pulled a handoff and went with a pass and then immediately recognized like, oh wait, the pass isn't there. And then instead of just throwing it away, he got sacked because he just held it and was like, maybe I can do something with it. But he's already Mignano, again, leaving unblocked defenders by play design. You got to get rid of the ball one way or another. So it was a struggle. It was a struggle all the way around, really.
Yeah.
Honestly.
When you're running that RPO, and Tom Brady did this not in the RPO necessarily, but for somebody that's like a mentor to Shadur, I would hope that he's like talking to him about this. When you're running an RPO, and like you said, there's an unblocked defender by design, he needs to get better at just dirting a ball.
Yeah.
At the guy, you know, whether it's a receiver screen or if, I haven't really seen the RPO with the slant, which is surprising, but he just needs to be more comfortable dirting that ball. So he's not going to get intentional grounding, but he's still not taking a 10 yard sack. Cause yeah, he's turning what should be 5 yard sacks into 10, 12, 13 yard sacks. And that's where that's a drive killer. I mean, not that a 5 yard sack isn't, cause it is, but it's when it's double and triple that's a whole.
You've got nothing for 3rd and 33 or 2nd and 18. Like, there's just no plays for that, really. So, yeah, it's true. And I do think part of it is he just doesn't like. I think he doesn't trust the handoff ever because he feels like they're not going to get any yards, which is probably part of why they're only running the ball 3.5 times. Is like I think even the play in particular that I'm thinking of. I think technically the look was probably to hand it off. I just think he has it in his head that he's got to go make something happen himself. So, which I don't blame him for, but it's tough, man. Sometimes you just got to run the plays and hope for the best, but I don't know. Anyway, you got anything else on this one?
Not too much. I wanted to get your thoughts on what is like the one area that you think needs the most improvement right now. So I know there's a lot, but trying to pick like one thing that you think like this coaching staff's focusing on for this week or something that can make a difference so it's not an absolute blowout.
I need to see them. I want it to feel less predictable on offense. That's what I'm worried about. I feel like it's just gotten way too predictable. I feel like I can sit back here and be like, oh, well, they're going to probably go wide receiver screen to the outside. Oh, well, they're probably going to, you know, like it's not. I don't know. I just feel like it's too predictable right now. And I understand that everyone's saying they can't run the ball, but if they even got like three run plays, I still just can't believe that we ran the ball 3 times in 1 half. Like let's try a little harder, you know? And if we can't move the ball with consistently trying to actually running a couple plays back to back, whatever, then fine, then so be it. But at least if they run it 2 times in a row, it won't be 2nd and 16. Even if they get 1 yard, it's 2nd and 8, you know, or 3rd and 8. Like, just like that's what kills me, is they're acting like, oh, we have no running game, so we can't run it. Like, well, if you pass it, he's just going to get sacked for a loss of 7 yards.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, man? At least give him the ability to hit a short pass for maybe a first down. So I think that's what I want to see, is I want to see an attempt at running the ball. If we attempt to run the ball and we get nothing all game long, fine. We'll figure something else out.
Nothing will be better than 3rd and 17. That's the thing, though, is you are 100% correct, is if we get nothing all game long, it's not going to be 10 carries for minus 34 yards.
Yes, it's not Shadur getting hit 7 times in 1 game. It's not, you know, so that's what I'd like to see. I frankly, we'll get into it. I don't feel confident at all in this next game not being a blowout after what we saw today. I stand by that I think Oregon just played a damn near perfect game. Outside of Bo Nix throwing one interception, genuinely, like everything they did hit, all that they blocked everything perfectly. There was almost nothing that you could point to be like, oh, that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that made it look uglier, combined with the environment, combined with the guys on this team being like, oh my God, this is different, you know? And hopefully they come into this weekend at least with the crowd behind them and some more familiarity with the difference and the speed, that they don't just get the doors blown off them again. But
yeah,
I'm worried about it. I don't know. What about you? What are you looking for?
That's fair. Oh man. I mean, specifically for this week, And the thing is, I don't think you can change it because I just think we just don't have the talent there. That is one thing. Prime, and he's not going to, as much as he's a candid person about, like, you know, we need to get more talent. And he said it, like, we need more dogs on the offensive line the lines, I think he said.
Yeah.
But he's also not going to say the exact opposite of we don't have the guys currently. Like, it's such a simple, like, misdirection of words. But he does it intentionally because he's not like Scott Frost. He's going to be like, oh, yeah, well, we blew the game because our players suck. I mean, he's not going to like.
No, I mean, he said himself, he was like, we clearly didn't prepare them well enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But he said there's no talent gap there's no talent.
Right. Yeah. There. Yeah. He denied a talent deficiency.
Like, all
right. Yeah.
Like, we all can see. Yeah, Shadur held the ball too long a lot of the time. But he's,
which is something Shadur said, by the way. I did want to say he did say that, but yeah.
But I mean, he should be able to hold the ball along a few times a game without. But he's got nowhere to go because the minute he snaps the ball, he's got guys in his face within a second. And so I don't know. There's gaps, and then when we're getting blown off the line defensively for 6, 7, 8 yards, and then Bucky Irving is just throwing shoulders into our linebackers and defensive backs, making them look like third stringers.
We miss so many tackles. If I had to pick something on defense, that would be the one thing. Tackling. If they just tackle all the guys, I don't even care if they get catches and run and whatever, but if they just make their tackles, then God, it would be so much nicer than just, I mean, they're not giving up 7-play, 72-yard touchdown drives or whatever it was. If they just tackle the guys they were around, and I understand that they're talented players that you're going after, but just the little things like trying to strip the ball from a guy instead of bringing him to the ground and letting him go for 10 more yards, that stuff was killing me on Saturday. So I'd like to see that gone too.
Yeah, I'm with you there. But no, the thing that I was going to say that I think needs to be improved the most is, again, and I think I said the same thing last week, but we're getting no pressure on the quarterback. Shane Cokes is not, like, as far as I'm concerned, he's not showing to be some like NFL prospect like we were told he was earlier in the season. Where's our edge rush? What happened to, was it? It was the Nebraska game. We were getting pressure, right?
I mean, yeah, they had tackles for loss in both the last two games. Like, they were playing behind the line of scrimmage. It's just, yeah, this one, they just, I mean, look, like I said, everything Oregon did, they were executing perfectly. So,
yeah.
They just, yeah, I mean, it is what it is, man. If they can run the ball consistently, it is hard to get pressure on anyone in the backfield because you have to try and stop the run. So it's just, yeah, it was brutal. It was brutal out there. But, you know, I think after, I mean, we've seen it before. How many Buffs teams have we watched where one side of the ball can't do anything? And then the other one is just like, at some point, you just can't do anything either. Like, at some point, you just, even if you're still putting in the effort, like, one team just has all the momentum and all the confidence, and they're just executing at the higher level, and that's what happens.
No, I mean, you make a good point, because, like, 42 points is a game we should be able to win. If it's, we have to score more than 42, with our offensive talent, like at the skill positions, we should be able to score that many points, but we can't because we don't get a push on the run game or in pass protection. But I'm just, I guess for the reason I'm picking like the pressure on the quarterback, and granted, we did get two sacks. One was
like the first play of the game.
Yeah. Was got one. And then Jordan Dominick's been like the biggest factor in our defensive pass rush.
He's been good. He's been
solid.
Taj Austin has been pretty good too, but he didn't show up at all in this one.
But I'm just in my head, I'm thinking, okay, Bo Nix is like obviously a top quarterback in the country right now. Like he's probably top 10. But he is not and never will be Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
And I just think in my head, Caleb Williams has shown, and it's not like it's like you're making him like look bad, but he's at least shown that he looks human when you get some pressure on him.
Sure.
If we don't get pressure on Caleb Williams, I mean, what did Bo Nix go for this game? He went for,
I don't know, but it could have been two, more.
276, nothing crazy.
He ran Caleb for Williams, a couple scores too.
Yeah, Caleb Williams with no pressure is going to go for 500.
Maybe. He might. It's true.
And I'm just concerned about that. But the good news for us, moving on to the USC game, is that Alex Grinch is historically, aside from one season at Washington State, a trash defensive coordinator that, for whatever reason, Lincoln Riley just can't move away from. And that is the saving grace for any, not just CU, but for anybody playing against this USC team all season.
Yeah, that's true. So I would hope that we see some positives from our offense again. I do think like at least early in the season right now, it does feel like Oregon is a more complete team than USC is. USC just has the higher talent level of wide receivers and quarterback, obviously. But yeah, I mean their defense, they just struggled with ASU in their last game. And they did watch some of that game, and Kenny Dillingham, the head coach of ASU, they were pulling out all the stops, man. I mean, it was running back passes.
Yeah.
You got the quarterback caught a pass and went for a long play. You had, you know, fakes. You had like everything. He pulled out everything he could possibly think of to try and make this game into something. And to his credit, I mean, it was a 6-point game going into the fourth quarter. And then, you know, USC's talent kind of showed up more. But yeah, I think you're right. I think their defense, hopefully we can get something going. I think that's part of my thing after this last week is, God, I just hope the offense starts to look better, because it's been going in a downward trend and I need it to start turning back up again. Otherwise, I'm going to start getting real nervous about the rest of this year. Which look is ridiculous, because they've already won 3 games and they were never supposed to do that. But now that, you know, we've reset expectations, it is hard not to be like, oh no, I don't know what's coming up next. But I agree. The defensive coordinator is a weak point for them, and I'm hoping that we can take advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either of us is thinking that we have like a legitimate shot at this game. But I mean, what needs to happen for us to even keep it close? I mean, is it like you said, is it just running the ball? Is it like the offense actually? I mean, obviously,
dude,
the offense.
I genuinely think if we come out and we can run 2 run plays in a row and get 5 yards, we're in business. Like, I like genuinely,
game on.
I feel like that's all it's going to take, because I'm telling you, man, every single play right now, that team is playing, they're going to pass every single play. Mm-hmm. And occasionally we run, and with Oregon, they had the guys up front that could reach out and grab a guy like Dylan Edwards and drag him down to the ground for a 1-yard gain. Now, that's part of why I really hope we see Alton in there, because you're not bringing down Alton McCaskill with an arm tackle. Like, it's not going to happen. So I think for me, that's going to change a lot. If they can show any semblance of a running game that has to be respected, then suddenly they have to play more run on defense, which opens up the passing, which also helps out your offensive line, helps out your blocking, because they're not just dropping back to pass block 50 times a game and against guys who are just fully like, oh, they're going to pass it every single time. Like, they are at a distinct disadvantage. I know they haven't played all that well the last game or two, but they are at a obvious disadvantage of their opponent knows what they're going to do like right away because they just assume they're going to pass every single play. So for me, yeah, that's it. Like, if we can run the ball, and I'm not even saying like go off in the running game, I'm saying like have a mediocre level running offense. And I feel like it'll change so much. It would change so much. And then between that and just so do that enough that you can move the ball consistently and score. And then on defense, they just have to, I mean, USC is going to score, man. Zachariah Branch is one of the, he's a freshman wide receiver for them. He's unbelievable. Like insane, just insanely fast, crazy talented. Brendan Rice, he played for CU. Now he's there. He's been playing very well for them this year.
Tied for second in targets.
They have their like we said earlier, their wide receiver core is like the best, arguably the best in the entire country. Their quarterback is the best in the entire country. And really, for me, I think their only hope on defense is to capitalize on the mistakes because they're going to make some. Caleb Williams has the same quarterback disease that Shedeur Sanders does of, I think I can make every play.
Yeah.
The only difference is Shedeur will eat a sack. He'll just take the ball and hold on to it and take the sack, whereas Caleb will just chuck the ball in towards his guys, basically, and will turn the ball over from time to time because of that. Knowing that much of the time when he goes running and does crazy stuff, he's going to find someone and make a play, but every once in a while he doesn't. So that's the recipe for success. Get turnovers on defense and sort of almost run the ball on offense. That's the recipe for success. And I hope they can do that.
No, and it's funny you mentioned it because I always forget until it's like the game we play or the, I forgot last year and then I forgot 2 years ago before I like actually watched Caleb Williams play like a full game. I always forget how elusive he is. And he's actually got some wheels on him. I mean, it's just he's just like, he is what I think every offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach's dream quarterback is, where he is like an elite passer. Like, he will make any throw you need him to. And he will make the right decisions 98% of the time. But if he needs to, he can get out and get some yards, and he can do it very well. He's enough of a running threat that, again, we have to like see you with the quarterback, running quarterback curse, has to keep an eye out on that. But I just keep coming back to, we're not going to get shut down on offense like we did against Oregon. I mean, I know, again, Sean Lewis, like you said, he looked suspect that game and 2 games ago, and even for the first half of 3 games ago. I have a hard time seeing us get shut down that hard because, look, against, like, this is not to take away anything from USC because they're obviously offensively one of the best teams, or again, if not the best team in the country. They gave up 28 points to San Jose State.
Yep.
They are a 1-4 football team, 10th in the Mountain West. Yep. They gave up 14 points to Nevada, who is quarterbacked by none other than former CU buff Brendan Lewis.
And he's still the same, by the way. He went to Nevada. He's still the same.
He hasn't thrown a touchdown all season yet. He has got 2 picks, though.
Yep.
They gave up 10 to Stanford, which is a good – I mean, both 14-10 are good defensive performances. But you these are teams –
Wait, they gave up 10 to who?
To Stanford.
Oh, well, yeah.
And then they give up 28 to Arizona State, who is playing like basically 8-man football. They've got nobody. Everybody is hurt. They don't have any depth. Granted, like Chase said, they pulled out all the stops. But, I mean, these are games they should be winning, giving up like 1 to 2 scores total. And against two of those teams, they gave up 4 touchdowns. So I just think I mean, regardless of the offensive line, we know that this team has the skill talent on the outside. And I mean, there's a reason that USC's leading tackler is their safety, who he's very similar to Blackburn, where he has to make a bunch of plays because guys are just getting past that first line of defense. Man, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be like a close game by any means, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. And I think being in Folsom and hopefully
I think that will make a difference.
Yeah,
for sure.
And having another week where McCaskill gets to practice, Brendan Gant gets to practice, Travis Jay gets to practice, I think it's going to make it for a much more interesting game. I really do.
This is the one I wish we had Travis for.
Yeah.
I would say. I would say this is not that. Obviously, it would have been amazing to have him at Oregon too, but we were never going to win that game, clearly. They were way too prepared and fired up and ready to go. And this one is just much more like, honestly, it's essentially going to be two teams built in similar ways. Lincoln Riley's is just farther along. Like, their thing is they have a superstar quarterback and very good wide receivers. And that's what they're at the skill positions. That's where they're good, right? Which is right. Also our thing. So they're farther along. They definitely have more talent. Like, their talent is top end. Those are top end guys. Like, I'm not saying that we have similar levels, but yeah, it would have been nice to have Travis out there for sure. I just think if we like, they're going to score 50 points on us.
Probably.
I genuinely think that's probably the case. So can we score? You know, I don't know. If you had asked me 4 weeks ago, I would have said yes, absolutely.
It's just been a steady decline offensively.
Yeah, so I got to see it. I got to see the bounce back. I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to be the downer on the whole season or anything like that, because I'm not. I just hope that they can prove they still got it. That's all.
That's fair. I think that the only other time we're gonna get blown out again, like truly blown out, where like we just look like completely overmatched in every aspect, is against Utah. And it's not because Utah is a better team than USC or Oregon. It's because they are just built the same way Oregon is, but even somehow better at the lines. And so I don't foresee us getting blown out until that game again. The over is only sitting at 73.5. So that, to me, I read that as Vegas is seeing like some sort of like you said, a 50, 52, 56 to, you know, 18 type of game. So I think it'll still be closer than that. I really do.
I admire your optimism, man. I really do. I really do. I don't know. I got one thing to say, and then I'm ready to wrap it up if you've got anything else.
No, I think I got everything out that I want to. I know it's a negative podcast, but I don't think there's much positive you can glean from a game.
I'm looking forward to ASU, man. That'll be a good one again.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to say is, and this is more about the team in general than USC. I've made my feelings about the USC game known. I've been listening still to like national stuff, all the commentary basically on what went down. And I understand this team has a lot of like hate geared towards it. Totally get it. I mean, it is what it is. They're like the most covered team in college football. I think a lot of people think they don't deserve to be. That's fine. Whatever. Even though what gets covered has nothing to do with deserving it, quote unquote. It's all
about, if you don't like it, stop watching it. You're part of the problem.
Exactly. So whatever. But I did see and hear on one of the things that I listened to where they were like, can we stop calling Colorado? They said two things. First of all, can we stop calling Colorado a national title contender? Which did anyone really think that they were a national title contender? I said that I was optimistic about their game last weekend, more so because I didn't think Oregon was legit than anything else. And turns out they are. They're legit. So that was, first of all, like, I don't think that's really ever been the question. If the media is wrong with that, fine. But I think most people understand what they're looking at here. And the last thing was, I saw the same guy said the roster is filled with guys who are scout team players.
Was this Danny Cannell?
No, it wasn't. Oh, okay. No, we don't need to. We don't. That dude's just a hater. He's just a hater who pays $8 a month or whatever for his Twitter Blue subscription so that he can talk shit about Colorado and drop shade and root for his Florida State team that sucks. That I'm on board. I am a hater of the Florida State Seminoles.
I hope they fail miserably.
But no, it was Bud Elliott, who actually is like a pretty smart college football analyst, but he just made the comment about them having a bunch of scout team players. I just don't want people to think that they're that down. Like, I don't want everyone to just start being like, oh yeah, they all suck, because Shedeur Sanders is legit, Dylan Edwards is legit, Zay Weaver is legit, Travis Hunter, obviously, like, yes, they are. They said they're quote unquote scout team players because of where they came from. But I just can't stop thinking, like, yeah, the team was 1-11 last year. If they take any other coach, if Dan Lanning is the coach of Colorado right now, they're 0-4, guaranteed.
I would give them 1-3. I think Colorado State isn't so like spiteful and ready for that game.
That's probably true. If the games are going the same way, what we have is all the same guys from the last team. So
yeah, he's not making a turnaround like this. There's no way.
No, but that's what gets me is I get that people want to hate on the team, but I also just want them to understand that, or not even understand, because I know they get it. They're not dumb guys. Danny Cannell is not he might be a stupid guy, but
he might be.
But they all would understand that even if you don't like it, there's literally no other way that this happens. So, yeah, that was the last thing that I wanted to say. Just, you know, bus versus everyone.
Yeah, bus versus. No, I think this team is still a 7-win team regular season, 8 in the bowl game. I don't think that this one game means that we're going to go 4-8. Or anything. I mean, I think when you've got an elite QB like Shedeur, you are going to be in, well, not every game, but 98% of the games you play. Clearly, it's not good enough for every game, but
I still think the coaching staff is good. I still think the team will continue to get better. I'm still looking forward for the rest of the year, but yeah, hoping that this weekend is a little bit of a better showing than the last one.
Just a little bit. But yeah, I mean, let's jump into it. What's your prediction, score prediction for this game?
I'm going to say, oh God, what was it this last weekend? 42-6.
Yep.
I'm thinking probably like 56-21. And I hope it's closer, but that's where I'm sitting at right now.
That hits the over.
Yeah, it does.
All right. Oh man. I've been thinking about this one for like, I was thinking about this before because I was like, man, what if we just come out and drop an absolute egg again? But we're not. I am confident we're not. Like, Prime and his family have probably never been embarrassed like that.
Yeah, right.
In their lives.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I think, you know, I think even if the lines don't hold up, I think Shedeur is going to come out and have a game for the ages, for his, like, statistically. Whether that translates to us, like, having a close game, it remains to be seen. But I'm going to say it ends up being 52-38.
Okay. I'd be happy with that.
That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points.
I'd be happy
with it, too. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode. As always, like and follow the pod on whatever app you're using. Hit us with a review if you want to leave us a comment. We'll get back to you on the comment, even if it sucks. And follow the Twitter. The Twitter's got a link tree up, so now it's you can take a look at that. It's got a link to like pretty much every major podcast app that you would use. If there isn't one that we have on there, just let us know. We'll get it added.
Brett's OnlyFans is on there too.
Oh yeah. My OnlyFans is on there for the low cost of my dignity per month. thanks for listening, everybody. As always, Go Buffs.
Yeah, let's Go Buffs.